Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
You're listening to Speak Up. It is December 23rd. I'm your host, Carl, and it is 2 days to Christmas as of now. I still have no idea what I'm doing. If you have any suggestions, you can text them to 778-782-2573. That is our studio messaging service. And in general, if you have any Christmassy anecdotes, or you just want to rant and vent about the show, you can do that by texting to 778-782-2573. If I said that too fast both times, you can look it up on our website at cjsf.ca. But yeah, so much for that. Let's just get right into On This Day in History. Let me just load up my intro here.
On This Day in History.
Yeah, it's more of an actual intro this week. I did some work on that. So yeah, it's December the 23rd. And on this day in 1988... Vincent van Gogh gets into an argument with his fellow painter Paul Gauguin. Not sure how to pronounce that. I also don't know Dutch, which doesn't help. And he cuts off his own ear with a razor and sends it to a prostitute for safekeeping, which, you know, not sure if that's the person you want to send it to. Seems a bit random. But at least that's how we assume the story went. In 2016, Martin Bailey, a British Van Gogh specialist, argued in a book that the reason in reality was actually completely different. And he says that it was jealousy. This comes from a letter dated January of next year, of the next year from then, where Vincent mentions that he had received his regular financial allowance of 100 francs from his brother Theo on December 23rd. Now, what you have to know about Van Gogh is that he could not support himself alone just with his art, and that's why he pretty much relied on his brother to support him, who was something of a fan of his art, I guess. And Bailey believes that the money would have been sent with a letter by Theo, which would also contain the news of his marriage to his girlfriend Jo Bonger. And it is assumed that Vincent would have been distressed by this engagement, because from his perspective, because his brother was getting married and he was going to start a family, he would basically be left out and lose his source of financial support. Now, if this is true, we really don't know. All these reasonings for why Van Gogh really cut off his ear are based on speculation. But honestly, whatever the real reason was, it's probably not even as close to being as interesting as our speculations about it. So let's get right into the next history. And that is on December the 23rd of 1952, bit of a jump, Alain Bombard, who was a French biologist, physician, and politician, decided to sail in a small boat across the Atlantic Ocean without packing any food or drinks. Now, he had theorized that a human being could very well survive the trip across the ocean without provisions, and he had decided to test this theory on himself. Now, according to Alain, the way he survived was mostly by fishing, using the fish both as a source for fresh water and food, with a self-made harpoon and hooks, and he was also harvesting the surface plankton with a small net. and he drank small amounts of seawater every day, which I guess is what you're not supposed to do. And on the 53rd day of his journey, he encountered a ship, and the crew of this ship told him that he was still over 1,000 kilometers short of his goal. However, after the ship's crew offered him a meal, Bombard decided to go on, and he reached Barbados on December the 23rd of 1952, after 4,400 kilometers of travel. In this time, he had lost 25 kilograms, or 55 pounds, if that's what you prefer, and was briefly hospitalized, but he's pretty much survived and lived a long life after that. Thing is, the legitimacy of this whole experiment, I guess, is still questioned to this day, especially when it comes to his water supplies. There are some people who theorize that he actually secretly brought drinking water along, because I guess it shouldn't be as easy as it was for him to survive on seawater and, you know, the water that was kind of filtered through the fish, I suppose. In some very uplifting history, on December 23rd, 1954, that's only 2 years after this last one, the first human kidney transplant was performed by Dr. Joseph E. Murray at Peter Brent Brigham Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. The subjects of this were the twins Richard and Ronald Herrick, Ronald being the donor and Richard being on the receiving end of the transplant. And on the night of the surgery, Ronald, the donor, got a note from his brother telling him to get out of there and go home. But Ronald sent a note back saying, "I'm here and I'm going to stay, and that's it." And of course, as I just said, the surgery went well, and Richard got to live 8 more years, whilst Ronald died at 79 of unrelated heart problems. And before his passing, Richard married one of the nurses who cared for him after the surgery, and they had 2 children together, which the media at the time followed with much excitement. So yeah, some very positive history happening on this day, apparently. Lots of firsts and lots of history. Next up, I am going to play you some songs by a band called Froth. I'm going to start with a song called A2, which is an instrumental, and then I'm just going to see where we go from there. So yeah, this is Froth. taking you to the weirdest, most obscure places on Earth. This is Peculiar Places. Yeah, as you just heard my newly created intro say, this is Peculiar Places, and I want to talk about a country today, an entire country that is only 26 square kilometers big, which is only 8 times as big as the SFU campus, which, to be fair, I still get lost on the Burnaby campus, so it's not huge either, but still. And this might also be the first country in the world to be entirely destroyed because of climate change. I'm talking about Tuvalu, which is the fourth smallest country in the world. It consists of several islands in the Pacific Ocean, about midway between Hawaii and Australia. And it is also one of the poorest nations in the world. The average worker on Tuvalu makes only about $1,000 per year. That's in US dollars. And only 1,500 of the 11,000 residents are formally employed. However, the country makes up for that with some very strong support networks. In 1998, Tuvalu was judged as the only nation in the whole wide world that had no human rights violations at all. This is because healthcare is free, education is free and compulsory between the ages of 6 and 13. And another thing that makes Tuvalu special is that the capital of the nation, which is called Funafuti, is an atoll. Now, if you don't know what an atoll is, I certainly didn't, you basically have to imagine a donut-shaped island. So it's an island that's surrounded by the ocean on the outside with a lagoon in the middle. Now, what atolls are is they are coral reefs that form over the craters of extinct volcanoes or seamounts, which, as the name might suggest, is an underwater mountain. And where the crater used to be is where the lagoon is created. And the residents who live on Funafuti live on the houses, along this atoll, basically. So it's so narrow at parts that when you drive on the roads, you pretty much have the ocean directly to your left and then the lagoon directly to your right. So you're kind of... there's parts where along the entire atoll, most of it is just the road, basically. And then on the sides, you're literally just surrounded by water. Now, the reason you might be hearing more about Tuvalu recently, that's at least how I found out about it, is because of how it's affected by climate change. This is because at some points, Tuvalu is only 2 meters above sea level. And because the sea levels are rising, of course, Tuvalu may be the first country with climate change refugees. But that's not even the only way that Tuvalu is affected by climate change. The nation's chief meteorologist, Hilia Vavai, says, "I think we have a lot to worry about. Cyclones and tropical storms have been getting much worse since the 1980s. We had a big drought starting in 1999. And flooding from extreme high tides is increasing also. Now, some have suggested that the people of Tuvalu should simply be allowed to migrate to Australia and New Zealand, and that's how you kind of solve the problem that the people of Tuvalu face. And I found a very interesting excerpt of what the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, Inele Sopuaga, had to say in response to these kinds of suggestions. And I'd like to play this for you.
Somebody was saying the other day, oh, it's much cheaper to collect the 10,000 people of Tuvalu with all their luggage, suitcases, maybe laptops, and relocate them in somewhere in another country. It's not as cheap as that. Because you are dealing with people with their cultural rights, their fundamental rights, sovereignty rights, and the basic rights that are all recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of the UN. And this is shameful. If the world were to come out here of Paris ignoring that possibility, this is all what Tuvalu is asking. This is all what Tuvalu is asking.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, this situation is in some ways pretty dire for the people of Tuvalu. And of course, you can't really accurately predict the rising sea levels and when really this will become a problem to such an extent that the people of Tuvalu will have to move away. But it does seem inevitable that in the course of this century, Tuvalu might be completely destroyed because of climate change. Now, in some more uplifting news about Tuvalu, I found a musical project by some of the residents, and you have to keep in mind that there's only 11,000 people living on Tuvalu, so the fact that they even list like such a variety of artists from the island is pretty incredible. And this is a song called Taku Lupu, straight from Tuvalu, that I want to play you. And then I'm gonna see if I can find some more music. This is from a YouTube channel called Music Tuvalu. They have about 7,000 subscribers, which ironically is almost as much as the entire population of the island, or of the country. And they post old and new Tuvaluan music. This first one, Taku Lupe, is... I'd say it's a pretty modern tune, but you can make your own impression of that. So that's what I'm going to play you now. This is Taku Lupe by Mr. Proman, and thanks to Music Tuvalu for uploading this. I'm sure they never would have expected that this would be played somewhere on a Canadian university radio station.
Manatua ne ang mga goe, yeso ka Yeah. falani yote po e ama feta uita uwa ite la lokana ba e anea uma fau fau e mata e mafa ine koe fakata unuta kumana konga te ena se a isau tali ne fai taiti go pili o po fuli mai fuko tau tua kata kata mai foki atu au ki te fale po te se mauti noa ako toku loto e tena e lo i a koe faka toka toka lo ahu tiki o kumatu ta fao faka sau sau tawatu ki te ala malai tawatu e i toku ala ki te lalo ka anava le faka tali tali atu ahu le ngaki mawhea mai koe ako te matangi kopolo e ilo i te ngali se ulango na loa te mohe mitine au i taua sau talaka e kata kata i te lalo kanava
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Still Speak Up, and you just heard some artists from Tuvalu that were provided by Music Tuvalu for my segment on the place. And next up, I'd just like to sort of chat about something I did on the weekend, and that was that I saw The Nutcracker at the Queen Elizabeth Theater, thanks to some tickets provided by a friend who works at a theater downtown. And it was interesting because it's a ballet, of course, which I'd never seen. So I really had no idea what to expect, sort of, going into this. And I know so little about ballet that I didn't even know that it doesn't have any dialogue. So it's just like, when are they gonna start talking about what's going on? And what you sort of realize as the show goes on is that there is a story somewhat that's at least noticeable in like the first few performances, but the story is not really the point of it in the same way it is in like a regular theater play, but rather it's the performances by the dancers and then the music, of course, which was my personal highlight, because with dance it's like it's really impressive, like especially when people like stand on like their toes and stuff, and it's just like, whoa, that looks painful, especially when it's like small children that do this. But yeah, what impressed me the most was the music, to be honest. And in general, the whole experience was pretty great. Of course, this is the kind of thing where, like, it's the same situation as if, like, you show a movie to someone who's never seen a movie before, and, like, you show them Transformers or something, then, of course, they're gonna like it. Or, like, you know, they're going to be somewhat impressed by it, because they have nothing to compare it to. But still, my subjective experience of The Nutcracker in the Queen Elizabeth Theatre was pretty great. Really fun, not too long. Actually, really not too long. Like, my usual experience with, like, theatre plays, at least the ones that we had to see in school, was always just that I would And most of my friends would just get bored after at least 20 minutes in. It sort of just drags on and on and on. And this might be down to the fact that we went to a very small theater that had, I don't know, maybe not the best production of plays. But still, I was very pleasantly surprised by sort of the pacing of the Nutcracker. So highly recommended. And to celebrate my newfound fondness of the Nutcracker, I want to just play some of the music composed by what's his name? I have his name here. Piotr, or also known as Peter, according to my Nutcracker information sheet, Tchaikovsky, a Russian composer who, I guess, composed this stuff to the story, which is German, I'm pretty sure. I am going to play you some of my favorite Nutcracker tunes that you will probably recognize. The first one being The March, which I guess is probably the most popular out of all of them. So yeah, so much for my experience with Nutcracker. Still, highly recommended at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre, although I'm pretty sure you will have to wait 1 year because I think they're done performing it. So yeah, hope you remember that the next 365 days. This is March from the Nutcracker. Well, what a wild ride the show has been musically so far, with some experimental rock, some Tuvaluan local music, and now the Nutcracker. Anyway, next up, I'm going to play a new episode of my segment Thursdays on the Hill, which is me interviewing some of your favorite CJSF show hosts. This time with some Christmas-related questions. This is Thursdays on the Hill.
Ever wonder what's going down at the CJSF offices? This is the show for you. It's Thursdays on the Hill.
My first question for today is, what do you think about Trump and the impeachment?
I'm very...
No, but in all seriousness, Burger King or McDonald's?
Can I say A&W? Is that okay?
No.
Oh, probably McDonald's so I can have an ice cream cone, I guess.
They have ice cream at Burger King.
No. Really?
They have Oreo King shakes at Burger King.
Well, maybe Burger King then. I don't know. I'm not eating a burger from either place though because I'm a vegetarian.
Right. Oh, damn. Mm-hmm. But which fries are better though?
Oh, definitely McDonald's.
Really?
Yeah, in my opinion.
I can taste the difference.
Oh.
Although I'm only familiar with the German McDonald's and Burger King, so maybe there's probably a difference.
To be honest, it's been a long time since I ate Burger King fries, so I'm right. Basically just basing that on my own nostalgic recollection of soft, salty McDonald's fries.
Well, any plans for Christmas?
I'm gonna sit in my living room, watch Star Trek, and play Pokemon.
The new Pokemon game?
Yes.
Any opinions on that?
It's Pokemon, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've heard that, like, it doesn't change too much. Like, it's just, like, another one of those.
Yeah, it's just Pokemon, but on a home console with some, like, weirdly shoehorned in sort of 3D moments. But it's just Pokemon. It scratches that nostalgic itch. As someone who hasn't, like, who grew up on Pokemon but hasn't played a game in the franchise in probably like 2 or 3 generations, it's perfect. If I were like a dedicated diehard fan who had played every version of Pokemon leading up to this, I might be disappointed, but I'm happy.
See, that's the thing with like the new Star Wars movies. It's all just like based on nostalgia, and that's the reason people go to see them, and that's why they always put in like specific moments to like...
Yeah, well, and the reason why The Force Awakens was just a remake of A New Hope.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what is the worst Christmas song?
The worst Christmas song? Can I say Last Christmas?
You can.
I feel like I think that's what the cultural zeitgeist is.
Opinion.
Yeah, everybody hates that song right now. Honestly, like, I used to really... like have a real strong dislike or even hatred for Christmas music, but now I'm pretty neutral to it. I don't actually hear a lot of it because I don't spend time in like malls or anything, so
lucky you.
Yeah
minus All I Want for Christmas Is You. I think
really?
That is the worst one. Yeah,
but that's everybody's favorite Christmas song.
Is it?
Yeah, the like the Mariah Carey version, everybody loves it.
But the Murakami version is the original, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say that.
Yeah, no, I have heard way more people say that that's their favorite Christmas song than I think you're the only person I've ever heard saying it's your least favorite.
I'm sure someone...
I said the only person I've ever heard. I'm not saying you're the only one
I've heard. Oh, right. Interesting. Well, any opinions on the year 2020?
I am very... It's very strange to me because for my entire life, 2020 has been sort of like the shorthand for the far future and like
cyberpunk 2020.
Exactly, or just like general like futuristic science fiction-y stuff. Has 2020 has felt so unattainable, so far in the future. But now that it's here, I mean, it's even stronger than the, like in 2015. We're like, oh, this is the year the Back to Future, Back to the Future.
I was born in the early 2000s, obviously, and still like 2015 when I saw Back to the Future 2 for the first time. It seemed like way in the future.
Yeah,
and so, then it just kind of went by.
Yeah, so it's weird. I don't know if I have any feelings about like how the year's gonna go. I mean, like. Obviously, there's election stuff in the States that could be good, but also, I mean, the world could end because of climate change, so who knows?
It's not going to be good, the election stuff. I think it's just going to be more annoying headlines and then all that fun.
Yeah, well, and programming coordinator Robin just saw some odds that have Trump being reelected, so who knows?
Please.
Yeah.
I do think that... Oh, no, let's not get political on this. Okay, thank you so much. And a very happy holiday season.
Happy holidays.
Okay, the first question is, what do you think about Trump and the impeachment? No, I'm kidding. It's Burger King or McDonald's, what's better?
I honestly have no idea. I haven't eaten at either in probably 20 years or 30 years.
Oh, that's almost like an accomplishment to be able to avoid Burger King and McDonald's. I never like voluntarily go, but I just like sort of get dragged into it by life. Any plans for Christmas?
It'll be pretty low key for us. So I'm gonna say no plans. Take it spontaneously.
Sounds very relaxing for a change. What is the worst Christmas song?
Oh boy. What isn't the worst Christmas song?
True. Very true.
I honestly have quite a distaste for Christmas music, and especially the real commercially Christmassy, Santa-y, stupid songs.
The supermarket music.
Yes.
So your answer is all of them?
Yeah. There are some carols that I really like, but those are few and far between, so most of it falls in the bad Christmas music category.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Any opinions on the year 2020?
Well, I'll tell ya. When it turned 2000, I thought that was a big deal. And to think that it's going to be 2020... That just seems so science fiction to me that I can't even wrap my head around it.
Yeah, it is very like it just seems like the far away future and we have so much time before 2020. But no, it's 2 weeks.
Hi, this is me, Jabe Gradowski, host of The Art Show at CJSF. Well, how you doing, Carl?
I am doing very well. It's the last day before Christmas break.
Yeah, at least for me, it's coming up here. I don't know what everyone else's plan is.
Yeah, I think no one's coming.
We'll see.
Anyway, the first official question. What do you think about Trump and the impeachment? I'm kidding. Burger King or McDonald's, what's better?
Well, there's substantially more McDonald's than there are Burger Kings in my routes of travel, so I guess McDonald's. I mean, I'll go for a junior chicken any time of day.
Any plans for Christmas?
Plans for Christmas? I'm going to go visit my family. They live in Port Moody, so it's not very far, but my sister's coming up from California, my cousins are coming from Australia and Europe, so I'm going to be very happy to see them.
What is the worst Christmas song?
The worst Christmas song is Paul McCartney's Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. It is not up for debate.
We've had this conversation.
It is the worst. It is Mariah Carey's also apparently the worst, but I'll I'll take Mariah Carey any day over Paul McCartney.
I'd say Mariah Carey is the worst. That's my worst Christmas really. Song.
But a couple years ago, I did a best covers of Little Drummer Boy, and Shannon and the Daptones took the number two spot. One of my friends, Lucy, who did not know the lyrics to Little Drummer Boy, did my favorite rendition of Little Drummer Boy, as she kind of drummed out the song, but just kind of figured out the lyrics as she went.
Nice.
Shout out to Lucy.
I actually kind of like Wonderful Christmas Time. I think it's like it's a very wholesome Christmas song.
It is a nice Christmas song for the whole idea of the season, but it's just a really annoying song.
Yeah, well,
and I don't like its structure.
Its structure. Also, this is like a music professional kind of thing.
It just gets under my skin. But that's what any good pop song will do. So I gotta give him that.
So that's kind of a love-hate relationship, I'm sensing here.
In the sense of like analyzing music at a structural and marketable level.
Interesting. Well, any opinions on the year 2020?
Well, the year 2020 will be full of 2020 jokes. There'll be a finally actually good set of novelty sunglasses for New Year's parties this year, so that'll be cool. Ultimately, every year I don't go into the following year with any sort of anticipation of groundbreaking change, because you know, every day is a new day, so why wait for a new year to do something new?
That's very, very wise of you.
I try.
Okay, thanks for the interview.
Thanks, Carl.
And a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and all that stuff.
Thanks, Carl. All the best to you and to our listeners.
Thank you so much. Well, now you know what CJSF radio hosts Jesse, Robin, and Jacob are doing for Christmas. As for me, I don't know yet, but you can find out by tuning in to my Speak Up next week at 10 a.m. as always. If you can't get enough of me and you just want to hear more, then you can do so by following me on my Instagram page, which is 711.fan.number.1. So 711 fan number one. That's me on Instagram. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. I wish you a very merry holiday season. Not a new year though, because I will hear you again before that, hopefully, because as things are going right now, I will probably do my Speak Up next week. But I will not be doing Jambalaya on Wednesdays at 3. Instead, our good friend Greg will be filling in and doing what he proposed to me as a Christmas-themed Jambalaya, so that'll be interesting to hear. To end this show today, next up will be Democracy Now. I'm going to play you some Christmas music of the, let's say, of the Vancouver variety. This is an artist, his name is S-Lord Efferman. And as you can imagine, that's not how you're actually supposed to say its name, but only under radio renditions. This is from the Christmas album Email Me a Holiday Spirit by S-Lord Efferman.
It's Christmas time. And who coat of snow. Guitar solo. Nice. It's that time of year where Santa gets the perm, so he looks real good when he's driving the motor sled. Krimbus 2013. My dad's vacuuming, that's what that noise is in the background. Cannot believe it is the month of winter already. Old Man Winter is a bastard. He thinks I'm afraid to wear cargo shorts. I will best him in a game of wits. I'm wearing my shirt with no sleeves and it's -3 out. I'm standing with my ass out in the cold December air. Tonight, me and Old Man Winter will fight till the death.